The information discussed by the host and guests on this talk show is meant to be informational only. Listening or calling in to ask questions for our guests does not create a patient-doctor relationship. Rely on your own doctor or healthcare provider's medical advice to treat or diagnose any conditions you may have. Nothing discussed on this talk show is meant to replace your doctor's medical advice. You should never stop your current medical treatments or delay getting medical treatment because of anything presented in this program. If you want more information about a medical condition or treatment discussed on this program, talk to your doctor. It's time for Health IQ with Heidi Godman, a daily dose of health and wellness information. Ask questions, get answers. It's the prescription for living a healthy life. Call or text us at 373-1220. That's 373-1220. And now, here's Heidi Godman.
Hi, and welcome to Health IQ. I'm Heidi Godman, and we are so very glad you're here with us. This is our very first show, and we are starting this adventure into the world of medical talk radio with a topic that affects millions of people, thyroid disorders. You hear about it sometimes when people talk about their metabolism. It's too slow or it's too fast. And then it turns out they have a problem with their thyroid gland. In fact, as many as 30 million Americans have thyroid disorders. Many people don't even know it. And more than 60,000 Americans develop thyroid cancer every year. So here to help us understand these conditions is Dr. Mark Lupo. He is a board-certified endocrinologist who teaches doctors across the country about thyroid treatment. He's the founder and medical director of the Thyroid and Endocrine Center of Florida, and he's also a very good friend of mine. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Heidi. It's a privilege.
Now, you are a thyroidologist. What is that?
A thyroidologist is a subspecialist in the field of endocrinology. Endocrinology is an internal medicine specialty that deals with the hormone production of various glands in the body, and the thyroid gland is one of the most important hormone-producing glands. So a thyroidologist specializes only in diseases of the thyroid and treats those specifically.
And you can do things that other endocrinologists can't when it comes to thyroid. Tell us about that.
Since our practice is limited to thyroid, we're able to cater to all of the thyroid needs for an individual patient. So we can do thyroid ultrasound to look for nodules and cancer and do that follow-up, do biopsies and do lab treatments and radioactive iodine treatments all in the office much more efficiently since our whole focus is on thyroid.
All right. So a lot of people may not even know what the thyroid gland is. Can you tell us about it? Where is it?
Yes. So the thyroid gland is a small gland that sits at the front lower part of the neck. It's shaped like a butterfly and it produces thyroxine, which is thyroid hormone. So I think of thyroxine as a metabolic messenger. So it sends the thyroxine signals each part of the body, every cell of the body and organ to use nutrients and oxygen for metabolism. So it controls heart rate, brain function, metabolism in terms of how we burn calories, muscle function. So every part of our body depends on normal amounts of thyroid hormone.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more. The thyroid impact on bones. You were mentioning bones. What is that?
So the bone impact, if you have too much thyroid hormone, that can steal calcium potentially from the bones and accelerate bone loss or osteoporosis. Some people who take levothyroxine, which is the most common medication we use to treat an underactive thyroid, will read on their medication label that it causes osteoporosis. But in reality, it's too much thyroid hormone causes osteoporosis, not the medication itself. So that's one example of an organ system, the bones, that can be impacted by thyroid hormone.
And I know that the thyroid can also affect the heart. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. That's one of the most important things that we have to remind our patients is that too much or too little thyroid hormone can have negative impact on the heart. So if there's not enough thyroid hormone, the heart rate can slow down and we develop bradycardia or a slow heart rate. The cholesterol levels can increase potentially if there's not enough thyroid hormone, and that can increase heart disease. And also the heart pump is weakened potentially by too much or too little thyroid hormone. Another cause of heart problems from thyroid is atrial fibrillation. So if there's too much thyroid hormone, so excessive amounts of thyroid hormone, the rhythm problem of atrial fibrillation can cause heart failure, stroke, and things like that. So the heart is probably one of the most important things we center our discussions on when we talk about appropriate thyroid hormone treatment.
And we also hear about thyroid's impact on pregnancy. Sometimes women will say, oh, I'm unable to get pregnant. Oh, it turns out it was my thyroid. How is that related?
We're learning more and more about that. Certainly, thyroid hormone requirements increase during pregnancy. So if you don't have a normal thyroid, then the mother's unable to make enough thyroid hormone. So our patients who are on thyroid medication, it's one that we tell them that not only do we have to continue it during pregnancy, but we usually have to increase the dose during pregnancy to meet those increasing demands. So that's one important thing. Also, miscarriage rates tend to be higher in women who have certain thyroid conditions or who have improperly treated thyroid conditions, and even autoimmune thyroid disease, which I think we'll talk about later, in the absence of thyroid hormone levels being off, can in and of itself impact miscarriage rates. So we're seeing a lot of fertility, miscarriage, and pregnancy-related issues for thyroid that we're trying to increase awareness for screening for thyroid problems before and during pregnancy.
So the thyroid is so key to so many of our body's functions, but sometimes it stops working properly. Why does that happen?
The most common cause worldwide is iodine deficiency. That doesn't mean we should run out and buy iodine tablets, but if we look worldwide, iodine deficiency, which is, iodine is what the thyroid uses in combination with an amino acid to make thyroid hormone. So if it's deficient, the thyroid can't make enough thyroid hormone and you develop a goiter. So if we've seen pictures of goiter from third world countries, for example, that's usually iodine deficiency. Now in developed countries, most of our thyroid problems that we're seeing in practice are from immune system related problems. So it's not an iodine related issue. It's the immune system will attack the thyroid and either destroy it over time and cause an underactivity or trick it into making too much thyroid hormone and cause an overactivity. So much of what we're talking about with thyroid disease is autoimmune or the immune system betraying your body and attacking the thyroid in some way.
And do we know why this occurs? I mean, is it just out of the blue it happens? Is it genetic?
There's certainly some genetics. So people with first degree relatives will have an increased risk of autoimmune thyroid disease, and especially females. And in general, females have a 5 to 8-fold increased risk over men for thyroid conditions in general. So there's some genetics to this. There's also probably some environmental factors that we're starting to unravel, but we don't have our head around that yet.
We are talking about thyroid disorders. My guest today is Dr. Mark Lupo, a Suncoast endocrinologist who specializes in thyroid disease. And we've been talking about why the thyroid goes a little haywire. But tell us about some of the symptoms when it's underactive or overactive.
Okay. For underactive, remember, thyroid hormone is needed for every cell to do its job. So if there's not enough thyroid hormone, everything slows down. So that can be brain function in terms of memory, depression, thought processing. It can be energy levels, so fatigue is common. Metabolism can slow down, so there tends to be a little bit of weight gain, not nearly as much as I think the media might suggest in terms of weight gain in thyroid, but 5 to 15 pounds of weight gain potentially. The heart can slow down. The muscles get weak. The GI system slows down. Patients can become constipated. The hair tends to thin or fall out a little bit. The skin gets dry.
So with underactive thyroid.
That's all underactive thyroid.
And overactive, it's the opposite. Yeah.
Absolutely. Everything's sped up. So people tend to be nervous more easily. They tend to have a higher heart rate, a tremor or shakiness. They don't sleep very well. They can become impatient or develop a short fuse. They can also get muscle weakness. And that's all symptoms of hyper or too much thyroid hormone.
And also you can tell just by looking at a person's face, isn't that right?
Sometimes, yes. So sometimes there can be swelling of the face or edema and puffiness of the face that can be typical for hypothyroidism, and sometimes
which is underactive.
Underactive. And that underactivity can sometimes change even the hair of the eyebrows. So sometimes they get eyebrow thinning, and just by looking at a person with a puffy face and a loss of some of the lateral part of their eyebrow, you can make a pretty decent guess that they might have an underactive or hypothyroidism.
And for overactive, what are some of those facial symptoms?
They tend to have a stare, almost like a deer in the headlight look, because it's an overstimulating state of being. So the eye muscles will become involved potentially, so they can look scared. Sometimes people with Graves' disease, which is the most common cause of overactive, people will have bulging eyes, and that's a very common thing.
Let's talk about diagnosis. How do you do that?
So diagnosis is always made with clinical features, so history and physical. So we want to examine the patient, get an idea of family history, and then we have a pretty good clue whether or not we're dealing with thyroid disorders. Obviously, feel the thyroid. Sometimes people with thyroid problems will have a goiter or an enlarged thyroid or even a thyroid nodule. And then to look at thyroid function, so under or overactivity, it's very simple blood testing. And the blood test that we look at predominantly is one called TSH, or thyroid stimulating hormone. And that's not coming directly from the thyroid. That's actually coming from the pituitary, which sits just under the brain. And the pituitary is the true master endocrine gland. So it sends out signals to hormone producing glands, including the thyroid, and regulates that production of thyroid hormone. So if we look at the TSH, if that's normal, then we 99% of the time that person's thyroid function's normal. But if that's high, then the pituitary is sending a signal to the thyroid to say, I want more thyroid hormone. So we have to think of it as a request for thyroid hormone. So a high TSH is what we see in underactive thyroid. So it's a feedback mechanism. Mm-hmm. Whereas a low TSH we see with overactive. So that's the most important tool that doctors use when they measure blood testing for thyroid to help screen for thyroid dysfunction.
But it's not the only measure, isn't that right? And sometimes people can have thyroid disease and still pass the test, right? I mean, tell us about that. What else do you look for?
A couple of different things. So sometimes we have to look for what normal is. So we all in our mind, we have different ideas of what we're looking for, but people can have autoimmune attacks on the thyroid and still have a normal TSH, or they can have borderline levels of TSH that many of the labs might call normal, but they're really early signs of thyroid dysfunction that if we look at things like antibodies, which are antibodies are what the immune system sends out to attack the thyroid. So if we look at those, we can sometimes get more insight even with a normal TSH. And then the thyroid hormones themselves, T4 and T3, which are produced by the thyroid, when we're trying to complete the picture, we can use those tests to clarify situations.
There is so much to talk about with thyroid, and we are going to talk about a lot more. But first, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more about thyroid disorders with Dr. Mark Lupo, a Suncoast thyroidologist, especially treatment and how to cope with it when it's so tricky. You're listening to Health IQ on WSRQ. I'm Heidi Godman. Stay with us.
You're listening to Health IQ with Heidi Godman, sponsored by Physical. If you want to feel better quicker, tell your doctor to prescribe therapy at Physical, F-Y-Z-I-C-A-L.
I'm Becky. After 6 weeks, my arm is back to 95%. You cannot imagine what this has meant to me.
My name is Grace. Your therapy made a vast difference in my ability to walk normally and without pain.
I'm Bob. Physical has become a partner in my life journey. I can tie my own shoes. I can drive my own car. Thank you for helping me regain my independence.
We are talking to you, our Physical client. Without you, there can be no triumph. Because physical therapy without the client, however inspired, it's like rain without water, only a hope. Because you live your life, your independence, your day. We exist. We exist to repair and rejuvenate. Thank you for allowing Physical to rejoice with you through these testimonials. Visit us at our website at fyzical.com or call 444-1223 to schedule your physical appointment. Physical, spelled differently because it's different.
Hi, I'm Bill Robertson. If you or a family member has had a hip replacement surgery in the last few years, you need to be aware that certain metal-on-metal hip implant devices have a history of failure, and one particular metal implant has been recalled by the manufacturer. Did you know that 93,000 DePuy ASR hip implants were recalled in August of 2010? Right now, all metal-on-metal hip implants are under scrutiny by the FDA due to concerns that the metal hip implants create dangerous levels of heavy metals in the patient's bloodstreams. If you have a DePuy ASR or other metal hip implant, you may be entitled to compensation. If you have questions about your DePuy ASR or any other metal hip implant device, it's important that you first call your doctor. Second, call me. I'm Bill Robertson, your injury attorney. Call me today for a free consultation at 364-2455. That's 364-BILL. Or visit my website at kirkpinkerton.com. That's kirkpinkerton.com. Let me get to work for you, because a good recovery is no accident.
Sound. The effect it can have on the human spirit is infinite. The sound of laughter. The sound of your family. The sound of Sunday morning. Our senses affect not only our state of mind, but also our state of being. At Physical, we believe in treating the whole client during physical therapy. Our clients are at the center of everything we do. With a state-of-the-art facility that nurtures the mind, body, and spirit, and a staff trained in the most sound and advanced physical therapy. We exist to help you love your life again. We know that as important as it is to listen, it's just as important to hear. Physical. Intelligent physical therapy. A new vision of physical therapy care in Sarasota. Come visit us. Call for an appointment at 444-1223 or visit us at fyzical.com.
You're listening to Health IQ with Heidi Godman. Call or text your questions now to 373-1220. And now, here's Heidi Godman.
Welcome back to Health IQ. I'm Heidi Godman. My guest today is Dr. Mark Lupo, a Suncoast endocrinologist who specializes in thyroid disease. We've been talking a lot about the thyroid gland and things that can go wrong with it. Now we are going to explore treatment, and this can really be so tricky. Mark, why is that?
Absolutely. Thyroid hormone is so carefully regulated by the body on a regular basis that if you're treating an underactivity or an overactivity, then the medication has to be tailored and fine-tuned to make sure that we're back on track.
And it can be tricky, though, to find the right combination. Doesn't it take months sometimes?
Sometimes. And if we're talking about an underactive thyroid, the most common treatment is replacing the exact bioidentical hormone that your thyroid can't produce efficiently anymore. So in general, the thyroid makes about 90% T4, which is the main thyroid hormone, our thyroxine, and about 10% T3, which is another type of thyroid hormone. And so we focus our replacement on the T4 part. So when patients are on levothyroxine tablets, and those are commonly marketed as Synthroid, Unithroid, Tyrosent, medications like that, then that's a bioidentical copy of that hormone that we can't make anymore.
That's the T4.
That's the T4.
But sometimes you'll go ahead and add a T3. What's the role of T3 in that?
T3, interestingly, is the more active form of thyroid hormone. And our body balancing of thyroid regulation depends upon conversion of T4 to T3. So that's not happening that much in the thyroid. That happens in the muscle and the liver and a few other sites. So that conversion is based on an as-needed basis for what the cells that need thyroid hormone require. So we don't typically will give a lot of T3 to patients because we depend on that usual conversion that can occur even if you don't have a functioning thyroid. But there are patients who seem to be at target for treatment who still have lingering symptoms of brain fog, fatigue, muscle aches that might benefit from the addition of T3 on top of their T4. So we call that combination therapy. And in my experience, about 15 to 20% of people do better with that, but it's not for everybody and it's not the standard approach in general.
So you'll start someone on this synthetic thyroid hormone. And how often do they take it? And how do they take it?
They take it each morning, typically, or at night before bedtime. But the key is to try to take it on an empty stomach to give it a good head start before any food or other medications, especially medications that have calcium or iron or foods that are high fiber or high soy. So we try to dose it first thing in the morning, at least 30 to 60 minutes before anything else.
And that helps with absorption too.
And that helps with absorption. So that way we get consistent absorption because there's 12 different strengths of this T4 tablet. So that reminds us how fine-tuned it is. So you want to make sure it's absorbed the same way each morning.
But it's not perfect. There are some side effects, right?
Correct. And the side effects are typically dose-dependent. So if we remember those symptoms of too much or too little thyroid hormone that we talked about before, that gives us the exact side effects of thyroid hormone, because there's really not a drug specific side effect. So in general, people, unless they're allergic to a filler or a dye in the pill, they're not having problems with the actual hormone medication because it's a copy of what they're used to. So the actual side effects come from if you're using too much of it, then you get the side effects of hyperthyroidism, which would the jitteriness and the anxiety and insomnia, things like that. And if you're not using enough, or if you're not absorbing it properly, then you still have persistent underactive thyroid symptoms.
So you know if you're taking it, whether it's working or not. I mean, does it make you feel better if you're fatigued with underactive thyroid, or if you're just too running on too much energy, if you have overactive thyroid? How long does it take before this medication kicks in? Is it a couple of weeks or
usually
how long?
A couple of weeks, usually within 2 to 3 weeks for treating both underactive and overactive, people begin to feel better.
And then they get their lives back? Is that what they tell you?
Mostly. As with any hormone, it's always better to have your own hormone production, but it's nice to have a pill form that can replace this very reliably.
And what about, I think we should probably point out, there's been a recall of one of the medications for underactive
heart. We just heard last week that Levoxyl, which is a brand of the levothyroxine tablet, has been recalled voluntarily because of an odor in one of their supply, large 1,100 supply bottles for pharmacies. So voluntary recall, and it will not be available likely until 2014. So people who are on Levoxyl need to contact their physician to look for an alternative.
Some people like to take more natural hormones. Can you tell me about that?
Yes. So the most commonly referred to natural hormone for thyroid is actually from a pig thyroid. So they take a pig thyroid and they dry it out and then they make thyroid tablets out of that. And that's marketed commonly as Armour Thyroid or Nature Thyroid is another manufacturer. And it contains both the T4 and the T3. So it's a natural source, but it's not bioidentical to human thyroid because pigs and humans in lots of ways are not the same, and same with thyroid. So the pig thyroid has a lot more T3 than the human thyroid. So often patients who take pig thyroid are getting excessive amounts of that very active thyroid hormone and might be more prone to heart rhythm problems, anxiety, insomnia. And we've seen patients with problems from that. Also, it's a little bit more difficult to regulate those medications. So our practice relies on the synthetic bioidentical levothyroxine and T3 tablets and not as much the
natural.
Other options, right?
Right. If you're just tuning in, this is a brand new show called Health IQ. I'm Heidi Godman, and we are talking about thyroid disorders. My guest today is Dr. Mark Lupo, a Suncoast endocrinologist who specializes in thyroid disease. We're talking about treatments right now. We've been talking about treatment for underactive thyroid. What about, are there any new medications out there?
Not yet. There's some coming down the pipeline. There's a relatively new formulation of levothyroxine that's, instead of being a powder-based tablet, it's a gel cap, and it's marketed as Tiracent, and it's been out for about 2 to 3 years, and it only has glycerin, gelatin, water, and thyroid hormone. So it's a little bit more of a straightforward preparation without the fillers and dyes and some things that people might be sensitive to. And in some patients, it might be absorbed more consistently. So it's not for everybody. It's not necessarily a first-line treatment, but it is another option that we have when patients are not doing well on some of the other therapies.
And that's called Tiracent.
Yes.
What about other medications that are in the pipeline?
The one thing that we keep looking for is longer-acting T3. So the T3 that we currently use is typically marketed as Cytomel, and it lasts about 8 to 12 hours, and we have to dose it twice a day in some patients, which is not very convenient. So if we can have a medication for T3 that's longer acting, that would be helpful. But so far, that's been elusive.
Elusive. All right.
Yes.
Well, we've been talking about underactive thyroid treatment. What about overactive? How do you treat that?
So the overactive thyroid treatment is in part based on the cause of the overactivity. So in general, the most common cause of too much thyroid hormone is that you're taking too much levothyroxine. So it's usually prescription-based. So we just decrease the dose of the thyroid medication that you're on, and that helps with the overactivity. But you're mentioning specifically patients who have too much of their own thyroid hormone that's being produced. So the most common cause of that is Graves' disease, which is when the immune system attacks the thyroid and tricks it into making too much thyroid hormone. So we treat that with medications that block the ability of the thyroid to use iodine to make thyroid hormone. So those are medications like Tapazole, or PTU. The other options, if those aren't working, or if it is clear that you need a more aggressive treatment, is you can treat with radioactive iodine to knock the thyroid out, or surgery to remove the overactive thyroid.
And what if you have nodules? Can't they also create more thyroid
Absolutely.
Hormone?
So nodules are common, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But from a standpoint of hyperthyroidism, the nodules can sometimes produce thyroid hormone independent of what the body needs. And in those cases, we either treat that with radioactive iodine or surgery.
So you have the thyroid, which is secreting thyroid hormone, and then you have a nodule.
And then you have a nodule, right.
Yeah.
That's overproducing. Yes.
Right. And what about thyroiditis? What is that?
So thyroiditis, itis in medicine just means inflammation of. So thyroiditis is inflammation of the thyroid. And the way that causes overactivity in some patients, and that can happen after a pregnancy or after a viral infection, those are the two common times where the thyroid gets irritated and it releases preformed thyroid hormone. So the thyroid hormone levels will go up for 6 or 8 weeks, and then they'll come back down. So the nice thing about that is it's often self-repairing, and you don't need long-term medication. So you just support. If people have pain, you give them medications for pain. If they have symptoms of high heart rate or shakiness, you can treat that as well.
And Graves' eye disease, tell us about that.
So about 40% of patients with Graves' disease, that immune system attack is stimulating the thyroid, but those immune system markers also will cross-react with the fat and the muscle in the eye and cause that bulging of the eye, and that'll cause sometimes double vision or even vision loss in severe cases. Graves' eye disease is more common in patients with Graves who smoke, so that's important. If you have an overactive thyroid and are smoking, yet another reason to cut off or to cease smoking. But those are patients that are difficult to treat. Sometimes you treat them medically for their thyroid, but sometimes they need surgery or radiation treatment for their eyes.
All right, so much to talk about with thyroid disorders. Medication, by the way, not the only treatment to consider when it comes to thyroid disease. We're going to take a quick break for news and weather. When we come back, we'll talk about other treatments for thyroid disorders, and we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. You're listening to Health IQ on WSRQ. I'm Heidi Godman.
Want to get in on the conversation? Find us on Facebook at Sarasota Talk Radio and post your comments.
All right.
At DeWitt Motors, we know cars. As the oldest family-owned dealership in Sarasota, your friends and neighbors have been putting their trust in us since 1958. If you want to buy, sell, repair, or rent, let DeWitt Motors and Practical Car Rental take care of you. With financing available and extended warranties, we make it easy to drive away with one of our hand-picked, previously adored automobiles. Visit us at 2820 Bee Ridge Road or DeWittMotors.com. DeWitt Motors, we know cars.
Get healthier, get smarter in just an hour a day. I'm Heidi Godman. Join me starting April 8th for my new show, Health IQ. It airs weekdays at 3 here on WSRQ. It's a new way to boost your health smarts. You ask the questions, I'll bring you answers straight from the country's top medical experts. News about cutting-edge health trends and treatments. Honest, straightforward medical advice and information. No hype, just health. Listen to Health IQ with me, Heidi Godman, weekdays at 3 here on WSRQ, the voice of Sarasota.
Join us for a seminar on back pain, minimally invasive treatment options with Dr. Thomas Sweeney on Tuesday, April 16th at 6 p.m. Dr. Sweeney, Southeastern Spine Center, medical staff, board certified in orthopedic surgery, published author, and nationally recognized speaker on disorders of the spine, will discuss treatment of common spinal problems which cause neck, arm, back, and leg pain, options for treatment possibilities for minimally invasive approaches, and avoiding injury to the back during sports and the normal activities of daily living will also be discussed. This is a free physical event, but an RSVP is required as there are only 50 seats available. A reception immediately follows, graciously underwritten by Duval's New World Cafe. Call 444-9119 today or email events at fyzical.com to reserve your seat for Dr. Sweeney's back pain seminar at Physical on Cattleman.
You're listening to Health IQ with Heidi Godman. Call or text your questions now to 373-1220. And now, here's Heidi Godman.
Welcome back to Health IQ. I'm Heidi Godman. My guest today is Dr. Mark Lupo, a Suncoast endocrinologist who specializes in thyroid disease. And we want to open up the phone lines now and take your calls and questions about thyroid disorders. Any questions you have for Dr. Lupo, he's here to give you some answers. You can text your questions to us if you want. The phone number for either of those is 941-373-1220. Call or text your questions to 941-373-1220. We'll take your calls and questions right now. Now, we've been talking about thyroid conditions and their treatment. We've touched on prescription medication, but Mark, what about other treatments? I know some people take iodine for that, but there's some concerns, right?
Absolutely. So if you go to a health food store or pharmacy and ask about thyroid support, often you're sold either seaweed or kelp or iodine. And iodine is critical for thyroid health, but too much iodine can sometimes interfere significantly with thyroid problems, especially people who might have borderline thyroid function to begin with. So I've had patients who develop a very profound underactive thyroid because they take over-the-counter iodine. And I've had patients then also develop, because of over-the-counter iodine-induced overactive thyroid. So iodine's important, and we want to take about 150 micrograms per day. And most of us get that in the average American diet very easily. So, but we don't want to take excessive iodine because it can interfere with thyroid function significantly and cause major problems.
So, do you ever recommend it to your patients at all? I mean, is it okay to take it in conjunction with a program that your doctor prescribes?
Yes. I do have patients who take 150 micrograms of iodine specifically because their diet doesn't have much iodine and they are tested and have low iodine status. But we don't want to routinely take extra iodine thinking it's always good for us, because I've had patients get in a lot of trouble taking iodine over the counter.
We want to go to a question now. Our producer Ian says we have a text. Ian?
Texter asks how often they should have their thyroid levels checked. They're 55 years old and female.
That's a great question.
Excellent question. So in terms of screening for thyroid problems, and I assume this 55-year-old female doesn't have a thyroid problem, if you're on medications, you're tested every few months until it's regulated, and then at least once a year. But if you're screening for thyroid problems, the American Thyroid Association for women above age 35 would say test at age 35 and then every 3 years or as necessary. And for women above age 50 to 55, it might be part of an annual panel of testing.
But otherwise, this is not just a regular test that you might have if you're younger.
Correct. Often it's not included. So don't assume if you had labs for your primary physician that thyroid was included. So always ask if a TSH, which is the screening test, is part of that.
So some conditions that with thyroid, you can take iodine with it, but only with your doctor's supervision. What about other alternative treatments? I know that some physicians say that you can treat this holistically. You can treat it in a more natural way. What are they talking about?
Often they are talking about things like iodine or herbal medications or acupuncture or other types of treatments, even coconut milk and oils. And that might be okay for people with very mild thyroid conditions who don't need medication absolutely in terms of traditional treatment. But for patients who have true hyperthyroidism, especially, I've seen patients who have had natural alternative type herbal care who ended up developing heart failure and liver failure because of untreated overactive thyroid over years. Mm-hmm. So these are things that we need to take seriously and take into the context. If it's a mild problem, sometimes we can get away with non-pharmacologic therapy. But if it's an overactive problem, there's not been any convincing, consistent, natural or alternative treatment options that have been proven to be helpful.
What about food? Is there a nutrition supplement that works with this or a food aspect?
People have talked about the thyroid diet, and that's marketed pretty well. But in reality, it ends up being a common sense diet of balanced diet and exercise and just doing all the things that we're supposed to be doing. There's nothing really specific to thyroid. There's been a lot of interest in gluten, and gluten is something that patients can be truly allergic to. And we see that in celiac sprue, which is about 1% to 2% of the population, where they have significant gastrointestinal illnesses, rashes, joint pains from gluten sensitivities, and sometimes life-threatening. And patients with certain autoimmune thyroid diseases may be more at risk and vice versa. But if you have celiac sprue and you eat a gluten-free diet, that doesn't change your autoimmune thyroid risk and vice versa. So I wouldn't avoid gluten. Although some people are gluten sensitive and not truly allergic who might have some benefit. The other thing is selenium. So selenium is a trace metal that is useful for thyroid function. And a lot of the European data states that for patients with autoimmune thyroid problems, they do better on selenium. So we're recommending consideration of 100 to 200 micrograms of selenium, with the one caveat that people who are prone to diabetes, there's been some studies that show that might increase blood sugar. So again, something to consider for patients who have, say, Hashimoto's, which is the autoimmune thyroid that causes low thyroid. If they don't yet need levothyroxine or thyroid medications, I put sometimes them on selenium and make sure they have adequate vitamin D and adequate iodine status to help keep their thyroid health intact.
And what part of the day would be a good time to take the selenium and the vitamin D? And do you take it with a meal or not? And how long after you take your thyroid medicine do you take it?
I usually try to keep it simple. So if you're on thyroid medication and you take vitamins, take your vitamins at the opposite time of day. So if you're taking calcium, maybe take calcium with lunch and dinner. Take your thyroid medication first thing in the morning. If you're just taking a multivitamin, take that at bedtime or dinner time. And then you don't have to worry about interactions with thyroid hormone, which is typically taken in the morning.
And vitamin D, you mentioned that, but I know that is a really tricky subject. A lot of different medical institutions, disagreeing about how much you should take. What do you say?
It depends. I think we are looking at vitamin D deficiency as almost an epidemic, and we want to see vitamin D levels in a certain range. But we went overboard, I think, initially with people taking too much vitamin D. So 1,000 to 2,000 international units per day might be reasonable. But talk to your doctor about specifics because it varies from person to person.
Okay, well, we are going to continue talking about thyroid disease, including thyroid cancer and thyroid nodules. We have to take a quick break, but we'll focus on those things when we come back and tell you why there's hope. You're listening to Health IQ on WSRQ. I'm Heidi Godman.
You're listening to Health IQ with Heidi Godman, sponsored by Physical. Visit our website at FYZICAL.com.
People often discuss what kind of boat is best for the environment. Well, the truth is, the best kind of boat for protecting and preserving the environment is any boat you donate to Moat Marine Laboratory. At Moat, we're well known for our conservation efforts in and around Sarasota and around the world. Since 1955, we've been doing the research to protect our oceans, our Gulf, our bays, and our reefs to ensure the future for the wildlife that depends on them. Right now, you can help us by donating your boat to Moat. Your gift is fully tax-deductible, and you can be sure it will be gratefully appreciated by the people and the creatures who depend on the beautiful waters that we share. To learn more, call 941-388-4441. That's 941-388-4441. Whatever kind of boat you own, you can use it right now to make the world a better place.
Physical offers fun and educational health seminars in your social environment, and they're free for groups of 25 or more. We want to give back to the community that has made our practice a success. Sometimes our therapists will talk about tried and true topics like who wants instant pain relief or fall prevention for seniors. Other times, we offer special topics. We can hold a seminar anywhere. We'll even come to your bridge club. In fact, we will tailor a seminar to your preference. To book a seminar, call 444-9119. That's 444-9119.
Here's a message from the Dottoli Cancer Center in Sarasota. If you or someone you care about has been diagnosed with prostate cancer, we know getting the most comprehensive, up-to-date information regarding your treatment options is of utmost importance to you. That's why when you log on to dattoli.com, that's dottoli.com, you'll find answers to many of your questions. Plus, if you've been treated for prostate cancer to only have the cancer reoccur after a six-month period or so, we want you to know that you still have options. Due to our proven combination of dynamic adaptive radiation and brachytherapy, seed implantation, we've been able to post the longest published cure rates in the world. Log on to Dottoli.com or call us at 1-877-DOTTOLI. That's 1-877-328-8654 for more information. Reputation, experience, and successful treatments. That is what has made the Dottoli Cancer Center for over 10 years a world leader in the treatment of prostate cancer.
If there were a place that could help you with your pain and was recommended by more than 350 Sarasota doctors, wouldn't you want to go? At Physical, we have a formula to help you live your life again. Our team of physical therapists offers personalized programs covered by Medicare and most insurance plans, so you can get back to the things you love sooner, like your begonias. Appointments are limited, so call today for a free consultation. Physical, master healing faster.
Call 855-858-9800.
You're listening to Health IQ with Heidi Godman. Call or text your questions now to 373-1220. And now, here's Heidi Godman.
Welcome back to Health IQ. I'm Heidi Godman. I'm talking to Dr. Mark Lupo, an endocrinologist who specializes in thyroid disease. And we've been taking some of your calls and questions, and we have a text now for Dr. Lupo. Let's go to Ian to find out what it is.
How often should someone take thyroid medication if they're an elderly patient?
How often should
above 8 or 10, it says.
How often should someone take thyroid medication if he or she is elderly?
If I'm interpreting the question correctly, it might be when do you start thyroid hormone and what are your targets in patients who are elderly? And
that's, is it different for older patients?
A little bit. It's a special population. And we do recognize that thyroid function does decrease with age. And so we don't want to overtreat our elderly patients who might be at higher risk for heart complications from aggressive thyroid hormone replacement therapy. So typically the TSH level that we talked about are target for that for starting treatment is consistently above 10. So 10 would be a relatively high thyroid or TSH level, and that's when we might want to start treatment for those elderly patients. Mild hypothyroidism in the elderly sometimes can just be monitored.
Okay. All right. And also myth busting. Tell us, you know, there's this one thing out there so many people talk about. Tell us about that.
For thyroid, there's a couple of things. Often people will say, I still have all these thyroid symptoms, even though my doctor says my levels are normal, or I can't lose weight, I have a thyroid problem. And those are relative myths, as much as we don't want to hear that typically. So from a weight standpoint, if you have an untreated, underactive thyroid, it is harder to lose weight. But people on average who are overweight, it's not because of their thyroid. It's because of our American lifestyle for the most part. So, but if there is an underactive thyroid, that might account for 10, 15 pounds and some difficulty. The other thing is the symptoms. So fatigue is a common symptom. In some studies, if you ask random people at a mall, for example, 70% might be tired. So obviously that's more than just thyroid, but you have patients who have on thyroid medication, they still feel fatigued, but those patients need to be evaluated for other causes of fatigue and not tunnel vision, thinking it's always thyroid. So that could be inactivity, so not enough exercise, not enough sleep, improper diet, or things like sleep apnea, where they're not sleeping well at night, or anemias, liver problems, kidney problems. So those mandate good general medicine evaluations on top of titrating and fine-tuning thyroid. So very common things that need to be reminded that once a person has a thyroid problem, not every symptom they have is because of their thyroid.
Right, right. But I guess that's probably something that you aren't really sure about which
Correct.
One it
nope,
is
because
the symptoms are also similar. All right, so we've talked a lot about the conditions, but one of the conditions is having a nodule on your thyroid. What is that?
So a nodule is typically an overgrowth, fortunately, of benign thyroid tissue. And if we look at frequency of nodules, about 4 to 5% of us can have a nodule that's palpable or able to be felt on physical examination. But on ultrasound studies, and so using sound wave to look at the thyroid more closely, 50 to 60% of the population might have a nodule. So luckily, only about 10% are cancer, 90% are benign. And this is something that I focus my thyroid practice on in my teaching when I teach other endocrinologists how to evaluate thyroid. It's usually talking about thyroid nodules and thyroid ultrasound. So the three things that we think about with thyroid nodules is, one, could it be cancer? Two, is it impacting the amount of thyroid hormone production? And three, is the nodule or nodules big enough to cause compressive symptoms, trouble swallowing, choking sensation, hoarseness, cough, things like that? So those are the questions that go through my mind. So ultrasound is what we use to evaluate a thyroid nodule. That's the most important study once you know the thyroid function is relatively normal. And we can then make a determination of the exact size of the nodule and characteristics on ultrasound that either favor a benign process or a more suspicious process, and then decide on what we biopsy.
And if you see a regular endocrinologist, he or she might send you to someone else to do that ultrasound.
Correct.
You're a thyroidologist, so you do
right.
that right in your office?
So we do that ourselves. And so it's the medical doctor doing the ultrasound with the information of the patient's history, risk factors, and with the patient there for the dialogue at the same time. So you're getting the results, the whole discussion, and if a biopsy is needed, we do that all at the same time. So the patient doesn't have to go from one facility to the next, whereas average endocrinologist might send a patient to the radiology person for an ultrasound that's done by a technician that's read by a radiologist and not doing it what we call in real time. So real time means that we are using the ultrasound transducer or probe to take whatever picture we need to take and not depending on someone else's static or still image to make a diagnosis, because that real-time imaging really makes a huge difference in interpreting that ultrasound.
And it's so important to know what's going on with those nodules, because they can sometimes indicate something else. Tell us.
Correct. So the couple of things would be cancer or thyroid overactivity. And the cancer situation, we use thyroid ultrasound to determine what needs to be biopsied. The good news is if you do enough ultrasound and you'd recognize patterns, I actually end up biopsying less nodules than I used to, because I can usually tell on ultrasound what's worrisome and what's not. So if you have someone that you're working with who sees a lot of it, it's less needle biopsy, but some patients do need a needle biopsy to help exclude a cancer and confirm it's benign.
If you are just tuning in, this is a brand new show called Health IQ. I'm Heidi Godman, and we're talking about thyroid disorders and right now thyroid cancer. My guest today, Dr. Mark Lupo, a Suncoast endocrinologist who specializes in thyroid disease. So sometimes a nodule turns out to be cancerous. How do you find that out?
Correct. So usually we can have a pretty good sense on ultrasound, and then we do a fine needle aspiration. So in our practice,
that's a biopsy.
A biopsy.
Yes.
Thank you. We use a very small needle, smaller than a blood draw needle.
Does it hurt?
Not much at all, no. And we don't even have to use local anesthesia for this in most cases. Sometimes some topical anesthesia. So it's a pinch and a little bit of pressure, but we use a needle that's smaller than blood draw needle, and then we do that two or three times into the nodule, and then we look at it under the microscope to make sure we have a good sample. Because in community practice, about 15 to 20% of the samples that are done are not good enough, are not adequate. So we're assessing for that as we go while the patient is still there, so we can make sure that we have a good sample.
What about genetic marker testing?
Good. So the problem with biopsies is they're not black and white. People have a biopsy that's done and they think it's a yes or no answer, but often there's indeterminate or in-betweens. And so we want to make decisions on, is it safe to watch this nodule over time, or does this patient need surgery? And sometimes that's hard on the biopsy alone to determine that. So there's some newer testing that still needs to be validated a little bit more, but that can help guide us if it's a low risk or a high risk situation. So we look at mutations. And so if there's a mutation present, mutation in the genetic code, then we worry more about a malignancy. And so if there's a certain mutation, then we would recommend surgery for a high risk of cancer, or certain genetic profiles on the biopsy sample that might favor a benign situation that could be monitored over time. So we're end up doing less surgeries now than we used to, because we can rely more on the biopsy specimen and not have to go to surgery in many cases.
What is an FNA?
An FNA is fine needle aspiration. So it's taking a very small needle and it's aspirating or sucking out a little bit of the cells from the thyroid nodule so we can make a diagnosis.
So that's that biopsy that we're talking about. And the thing about thyroid cancer, I mean, any kind of cancer, is it's scary, frankly, but it's slower growing, isn't it?
In general, yes. So of the 60,000 cases of new thyroid cancer that we're expecting in 2013, and that's double from 10 years ago, it tends to be a fairly slow-growing process and responds very well to treatment. So most people with a diagnosis of thyroid cancer can expect to live as long and healthy of a life as they would have without it, assuming it's treated properly up front. So that's typically surgery. And in some cases, we have to give radioactive iodine after surgery. But the good news is we're doing a lot less of that radiation treatment than we used to, because not all patients are getting the benefit that we once thought, and the surgeries are more thorough. And with good ultrasound before and after surgery, we can pick up things that we couldn't see before in terms of being more confident about the right initial surgery, or documenting that there's not a recurrent or persistent cancer there. So we're same disease, but much more savvy at treating it now.
And what about the treatment? Let's talk about that.
So the most important part of treatment for thyroid cancer is surgery. So you want to work with a surgeon who does a high volume of thyroid surgery to decrease the complications in terms of voice problems or calcium problems after surgery.
But are we talking about removing the thyroid altogether?
Yes. So if we have a biopsy that shows cancer, we typically remove the whole thyroid gland. And sometimes, depending on what the ultrasound shows before surgery or the findings during surgery, we remove lymph nodes from the neck as well.
And you can survive without your thyroid gland.
Yes. So then we're back to talking about the underactive that we mentioned before, where you take levothyroxine medication to replace what's missing.
All right. And what about the surgery? How do you do it? Is it traditional open surgery? Are you able to do it in a more minimally invasive way?
We're not using robotics routinely for thyroid surgery in this country. And it's become less invasive. So the incision can be an inch to an inch and a half now, where before it was 4 or 5 inches, depending on the case. Sometimes it can be outpatient surgery and not hospitalized. But typically it's between a 30-minute and 2 to 3 hour surgery, depending on how complicated it is. But often young, healthy patients are back to work within a few days and with very little pain medication, more than a Tylenol, for example.
What about recovery? What's that like?
So recovery, there's typically we tell patients to expect a week or so of some hoarseness, maybe a little bit of trouble swallowing and some swelling. But again, most patients feel pretty good energy levels within a few days and are often back to work without heavy lifting and that type of thing, but also remind patients that when you go through, especially a total thyroid removal, for about 3 or 4 weeks afterwards, you have good days and bad days because you're getting used to your thyroid's been removed. Now you're on new medications. You've been under anesthesia. So it's pacing and having realistic expectations is important.
What about recurrence and how often would you survey someone to find out?
Typically for the first 3 to 5 years, we look once or twice a year with a combination of blood tests for tumor markers and also with neck ultrasound. That's again, the ultrasound is key for diagnosis and key for surveillance and follow-up. And after the first couple of years, we have a pretty good sense of the risk of recurrence, but we still look periodically and we're also monitoring the patient's thyroid medication to make sure it's within the target range.
And can you leave us with a little hope?
Oh, absolutely. So most thyroid cancer patients do extremely well. The death rate, which we don't like to talk about in cancers in general, from thyroid cancer has been the same over the last several decades of about 1,700 to 1,800 people per year. So the good news is that we're not seeing an increase in the patients dying from thyroid cancer. We're just seeing an increase in the incidence. So our treatment is working well. And most people can live a long, healthy life just as they would have if they had never had the thyroid cancer.
And you're catching it more often. Why is that?
And we're catching it a combination of two things. One is that we are seeing nodules that we would not have found. So incidental nodules are a big part of any thyroid practice where patients have had a CT scan of their chest or their neck for other reasons, or a carotid ultrasound looking at the blood vessels, and they say there happens to be a thyroid nodule. So sometimes we're finding the smaller cancers before we would have. The second thing is we are seeing an increased rate of thyroid cancer, even larger cancers. So there's something else going on besides just detection. And important on this detection is we don't want to overtreat people with what we call micro cancers. So cancers that are very small, less than half of an inch, for example, often we can watch those over time without aggressively treating because we might cause more harm than good. So we don't want to overtreat any medical condition, and especially these thyroid cancer patients that overall have a very good prognosis.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Mark Lupo, for helping us better understand thyroid disease and also for being our very first guest here on Health IQ. How do people get in touch with you?
Thank you for inviting me. It's an honor. And our website is thyroidflorida.com and our phone number is 941-342-9750.
Dr. Mark Lupo, thank you so much. Now, tomorrow on Health IQ with Heidi Godman, we're going to talk about common problems with hands, elbows, and shoulders. We'll chat with Suncoast orthopedic surgeon Dr. Chris Forzo, and you can call and text your questions tomorrow. So for now, we hope you have a great day. I'm Heidi Godman. Our producer is the amazing Ian Dooley. And we'll be back tomorrow at 3 here on WSRQ, the voice of Sarasota.
Thanks for listening.